National Liberation Front, is also the head of the local chapter of Earth First, or one of these other terrorist adjunct organizations. All of these things, we were talking about a certain phase earlier about the initial unleashing of the drug, rock, sex counterculture, which created a sort of labor pool of people to be drawn into a movement that was bankrolled with millions and millions of dollars from these European-based, and in some cases American-based, very wealthy, powerful old families that want to run the world and want to use these kinds of movements as battering rams against any kind of efforts to put forward modern industrial society, the nation-state system. So you had a second phase that began in the late 1970s. We picked up on it at the time. In fact, we were very much involved in the fight at this period of time in Europe, where suddenly Friends of the Earth, a guy named Brice Lalonde, who was one of the international founders and leading figures in Friends of the Earth, put out the line in France, and it spread all over Europe very rapidly, that nuclear energy was fascism.
Well, and plutonium was fascist.
Right, and that anything that could be done to prevent the spread of nuclear energy should be done. Now, it's interesting that among the leading figures, along with Prince Philip and Prince Bernhard, in the launching and continuing operations of the World Wildlife Fund, was John Loudon, who was the chairman of the board of Royal Dutch Shell. The major multinational oil companies, particularly the Anglo-Dutch oil companies associated with Prince Philip's Club of the Isles apparatus of the leading royal families of Europe, were very much for their own reasons opposed to nuclear energy. And so this launching of nuclear terrorism, of environmentalist eco-terrorism, which began to be a big phenomenon in the late 1970s. In 1977, 1978, you began to have mass rioting at the sites of nuclear power plants. Probably one of the more famous incidents was in 1978 at Crémerville in France, where you had pitched battles between radical environmentalists and the French police over the effort to shut this place down. At the same time, you had an outbreak of terrorism targeting leading European industrialists, including Deutsche Bank's Jürgen Panto, who was a leading advocate of industrial development, financial investment in large infrastructure projects in the Third World. You had Executive Intelligence Review's founder, Lyndon LaRouche, being told by German and American authorities that he was on the same hit list of eco-terrorist groups, including well-known, quote, left-wing terrorist groups like the Baader-Meinhof gang during this period, because he was a leading advocate at that time of fusion energy, as well as other forms of nuclear energy. There were many other issues involved, but the slogan that was used to set the troops wound up and in motion to carry out literally acts of murder was this nuclear energy equals fascism slogan. And I think it's important to bear in mind here in the United States more recently that if you think about the point that you made right at the beginning of the show, that the Unabomb network, not this single crazy lone supposed serial killer of mythology, but the real Unabomb network was part of this Earth First apparatus and carried out a series of bombings, including two murders and 20 other serious injuries over an 18-year period. You get an idea that this is a serious, substantial terrorist capability with only a small gap of space between the highest level, most prestigious kinds of figures, not just in the world environmental movement, but in the world superpower structure overall.
We're going to just one more point on this network behind this terrorism, and that has to do with this the guy that you've mentioned, Clausen, the guy who's written a book about his experiences in Earth First. Maybe you just sketch a little bit of that, and also he's been a figure now in Montana since this arrest and has tried to come forward with some information, has been prevented from doing so by death threats. Maybe you want to fill us in on that.
He was going to give a press conference in Montana last Thursday, and on his way down, and when he got there, he got such a series of death threats, and the hotel was receiving bomb threats. that that the police could not protect him, and they decided to cancel the press conference. And during that press conference, Clausen was going to hand out a whole packet of materials, which documents from the writings of Earth First itself, from the statements of environmental leaders and other pieces of evidence that he has collected, that, that there is a connection between Theodore Kaczynski and Earth First and or the Unabomber, whether it's Kaczynski or not. So the connections are all there, and they're fairly straightforward and very clear. And the news media has picked up somewhat on this. He was on ABC TV on April 5th. They had him on as the lead item of news, and that caused an enormous uproar in around the United States, because for the first time, you were getting something that is other than, oh, this guy's a loner. You know, where does he actually belong to? And the interesting thing about Clausen is he had Kaczynski pegged more than a year ago. He told the FBI as soon as Gil Murray of the California Forestry Association had been killed, he immediately, within 1 week, came out, within a few days, as a matter of fact, came out and he publicly said, look, this is connected, the Unabomber is connected to the list that is found in Live Wild or Die. And shortly thereafter, he said, and the only place where that list was distributed recently was at the Native Forest Network Conference in Missoula, Montana. So he was there. And he had him pegged over a year ago. And it just took this long for suddenly this guy to be caught, but they could have done it a lot sooner.
Okay, now this brings us to our second complex of issues, which is the FBI. Did they get their man? I mean, have they solved, with quotes, the so-called Unabomber issue?
Let me start by saying that I think that there were undoubtedly individuals in the FBI who worked on the task force over this 18 or so year period who were inclined to go in the direction of a competent investigation. And there were people in the field office in San Francisco who were looking in the direction of this eco-terrorist apparatus. However, the overall character, the defining character of the FBI investigation into this case is an embarrassing, incompetent failure, which is in fact based on methods that themselves are clinically insane and could never solve a crime in a million years. Look at what happened. The FBI, particularly the behavioral sciences unit down at their training facility in Quantico, Virginia, has basically developed a massive computer database of synthetic computer profiles. And the press coverage, by and large, since the arrest of Kaczynski, has been shaped by the garbage being spewed out of the FBI's computer in Quantico. What do they say? They say the Unabomber was a serial killer. They say that the Unabomber was some sort of lone person, as you said at the beginning, driven by psychological demons, internal demons, victim of a poor family upbringing, or something like this. Now, if you were to conduct a competent investigation, the first thing you would do would be to pull the plug on these crazy psychological profile composite profile computers.
Make, what do they call them, perpetrator profiles or
right,
things like this?
Right, exactly. The first thing that you would have done was to simply do a scan of the pattern of people being targeted. And anybody who is willing to seriously look at the idea that the radical environmentalist movement is a serious, genuine terrorist apparatus engaged in a continuous pattern of criminal activity. Now, this involves breaking from the, quote, political correctness that you find every day of the week in the newspapers and on the TV news, in which environmentalism, including all of these crazy hoax, anti-scientific quack ideas, are given tremendous credence and popularity because it conforms to a certain political agenda. But if you looked at the targets, the very first thing that you would have concluded, which Barry Clausen concluded, which we concluded in looking at the pattern, was that the targets are all on the enemy's list of the radical environmental movement. You would have started by looking at the organizations, the publications, and you would have immediately defined a path of investigation that I'm certain would have led directly to not just Kaczynski, because we still don't know, for one thing, whether he's the guy or whether he's merely part of a broader network, but you would have taken a completely different approach to solving the crime. And I have no doubt that it would have been solved a lot sooner, and a number of people's lives, particularly the Burson Marsteller executive and the California Forest Association guy, their lives might have been saved. We don't know whether other people were killed by this terrorist apparatus, and it never made it into the FBI computer and doesn't even figure on this list. So the whole idea is that it was done, it was not a case that was solved by the FBI using these behavioral methods. In fact, I would submit that something very different happened. There has been an upsurge of irregular warfare targeting the United States since President Clinton was elected and inaugurated. President Clinton has broken from Prince Philip and his friends. The United States is moving in a different kind of policy direction, and unlike the Bush presidency, when we didn't have any terrorist problems here in the United States, look what happened as soon as Clinton came into office. Shootings at the CIA, the World Trade Center bombing, over 20 assassination attempts against the president, the Oklahoma City bombing, all of these kinds of things going on. We are targeted as a nation for a campaign of low-intensity warfare, and I would say that what happened is that it was time to escalate the eco-terrorist component of this multifaceted irregular warfare offensive. Because what happened? You had the Oklahoma City bombing, and for the first time after that, the Unabomber sends a letter to the New York Times claiming credit for a terrorist action and putting his ideology out on the table. It was known to anybody seriously investigating the pattern of targets that it was the eco-terrorists, that it was Prince Philip's minions, but now suddenly it's being advertised. And then the next step was the publication of the 35,000-word manifesto by the New York Times and the Washington Post. The case was solved because Kaczynski's brother came forward and recognized the clear signature of his writing and his philosophy in that Unabomber manifesto. And it still remains to be seen whether Kaczynski was the actual author or whether he was merely part of a broader network or maybe just somebody peripheral. Maybe he's the Lee Harvey Oswald of the eco-terrorist operations. But if you step back a second and look at the whole history of how the FBI, even at its best, has tended to operate within very narrowly circumscribed ground rules. You never go after the citizens above suspicion. You never go after the Prince Phillips or the McGeorge Bundys of the Ford Foundation, which bankrolled in millions of dollars this radical environmentalist movement, including the entire New Left terrorists. So if you're not willing to go after that command structure, and as we've said earlier in the broadcast, the difference between Prince Philip and David Foreman is not very great. They rub elbows. They show up at meetings together. Under those circumstances, there's a built-in prejudice against solving the case among some of the political figures that define the activities of the FBI. And the best way to ensure that you'll never solve a case in a million years is to resort to these quack methods of going to a computer and asking the computer to solve the crime.
We have to have two quick answers to questions that remain. First of all, what is really known about the so-called Unabomber? What is that in about 5 minutes or less?
Well, there he's carried out a whole string of bombings. This is the interesting thing. The Unabomber, in all his writings, always talks about we. And he has been very consistent that he's part of a movement. And he even tells you the literature that belongs to this movement. I mean, it's very clear that he's never referred to him as I have. There's never the I, it's always the we. And it is the FBI and it is the news media that says, oh, this guy is a loner. He's never said he's a loner. In terms of what they found in his cabin, I mean, there's all kinds of evidence. Perhaps what...
We're going to get to Kaczynski in a minute, but that we're still in the Unabomber, right? Because I think these are still separate until proven convergent. The kind of people that he's killed, right? We've mentioned a timber executive, right? He seems to be right up the alley of Earth First, right? Then you've got this other guy who worked for Exxon and so forth.
And very early on,
one of the most tragic cases was an Air Force officer who wanted to be an astronaut who somehow
realized it was in a biology laboratory in Berkeley. He's targeted some of the same targets that animal rights activists have targeted. Mm-hmm. Some of the same laboratories, as a matter of fact. So there has been a very consistent pattern of this. He's done against high technology, computer people, airline industry, against industrial targets, you could say that, Exxon, and against targets that animal rights activists and environmentalists would pick. I mean, this has been his pattern. There has been a very large amount of bombings that have not been ascribed to the Unabomber. I think that those bombings should start to be examined. There's been an enormous amount of bombings that have been unresolved and have been mostly unreported, particularly
proportionally.
Over the last
few
years.
Many would you say? I mean, compare the Unabomber ones to the unsolved and even unattributed ones.
Well, it's difficult to say.
In terms of numbers of incidents.
Oh, well, in the last 6 months, you've had a whole string of bombings of Forest Service Office, for example, with pipe bombs. Mm-hmm. And the pipe bombs are very characteristic of the kind of pipe bombs that Earth First members would have used for their targets.
I think there's another thing to bear in mind also. You, I think, very correctly said, let's talk about the Unabomber and not about this person in jail in Montana, Kaczynski. Bear in mind that the FBI computer invented the Unabomber. There was never a manifesto from the Unabomber. The FBI created the term referring to a kind of a composite of the mathematics, the university targets, which were some of the early targets, and some of the airline industry targets that were also early targets. So the whole idea, which has been completely adopted lock, stock, and barrel by the general media, that there even is a Unabomber, as opposed to a terrorist network embedded within the environmentalist apparatus that's been doing a lot of nasty things for quite a number of years. This is a construct, and as I say, it's another reflection of this incompetence of this behavioral computer coming out of the FBI headquarters. They made up a name. They made up a person that may never have existed, that there may not be a Unabomber. The standing presumption
he's a hologram in their
that's
computer.
That's correct. Exactly.
I mean, and look
it's a piece of cybernetics that's been picked up by the media.
I mean, and look at the stuff that they're finding in his cabin. I mean, they're finding the amount of supplies that he has, the amount of equipment that he has. This is a veritable bomb factory. But you can't manufacture bombs there because you don't have electricity or machine tools.
I mean, now we're talking about Kaczynski. We're shading
right.
Well,
let's switch to Kaczynski. Yeah. Now, what do we know about Kaczynski,
But this is what I was getting to. I mean, this guy, he's got a cabin, and he's got all these different types of bombs that the Unabomber has not used.
Well, let's also take it...
he also has, you know...
Let's take it from a different standpoint. Let's go back to the beginning. We were discussing the fact that in the late 1960s, there was a concerted top-down effort involving the Prince Phillips, the McGeorge Bundys, the Bertrand Russells, the drug counterculture, to get some of the best and brightest of the American college age and slightly older generation to turn on, tune in, and drop out. Ted Kaczynski was not a loner. He was part of a mass exodus. He was a victim of a phenomenon that was organized to destroy an entire generation of future potential American scientists, academics, political leaders, you name it. Now, the whole idea that this FBI computer generated of a loner and an isolated individual, it may be held up during the first 24 hours when they showed pictures of this cabin, but it is not even held up to the scrutiny of some, you know, just straightforward reporters who've knocked on some doors and asked people who knew this guy what he was like. If you looked at the Harvard annual yearbooks of alumni, he's all over the world. He's not just simply hiding out in a cabin in Montana for 25 years. At one point, he's traveling around Latin America. Nobody has yet even said publicly where in Latin America he was living, but he apparently spent a good deal of time. He's self-taught in Spanish. He writes and speaks it fluently. He lived somewhere in Latin America. I don't know, maybe he was a member of Sendero Luminoso,
cultivating
cocaine.
Or some Colombian group on the same track.
Right, in the late 1980s, the Harvard Yearbook has him listed as living in Afghanistan and living in a specific city in the frontier of Afghanistan that was known as a counterculture mecca. It was also, by the way, a major area where the George Bush, Ali North, Afghanzi terrorist operations were training, were manufacturing and selling drugs, were running a war against the Soviet army inside Afghanistan. So, quite frankly, we know very little about this guy, but yet already what's being even admitted to in bits and pieces here and there does not at all conform to this idea of some loner. He was apparently at this Native Forest Network conference at the University of Montana, which was a pep rally for the Zapatista Liberation Front. It was a strategic move to integrate Latin American terrorist networks with the radical environmentalists in the United States.
We might say indigenous groups of threatened peoples from Latin America and elsewhere.
Right, exactly.
To move them in with these regionalists and ecologists of the other side. So in actuality, Kaczynski may turn out to be a gregarious, dynamic, globe-trotting.
Right, he could be Don Juan for all we know. He could be swashbuckling.
The stories that he doesn't like drugs also may not stand up to that Afghan stint. Well, all right, look, we have just a few minutes left, and in this context, maybe we can try to do what is also never done, which is to try to situate this within the context of world terrorist developments in general. People have been noticing lately that the financial infrastructure of the Hamas movement in the Middle East is all based in Britain. That's where the money all comes from. That when a bomb goes off in London signed IRA, that may be the MI5 British intelligence branch of the IRA, this EZLN in the Zapatistas there in Chiapas, also backed by the British, and of course you've got the British support gloating over the Waco bombing, gloating over the World Trade Center bombing. How can we locate the Unabomber, again with the quotes hanging off, within this worldwide pattern?
Again, you've got a lot of brand names out there. The invariant is irregular warfare directed from London. Now that doesn't necessarily mean that Prince Philip gets on the phone with Ted Kaczynski and says, go kill this person. The way this thing works is much more the Punch and Judy principle. You've got a lot of players, puppets on the stage. They're puppets in the sense that they don't control the way they think. They've bought onto ideologies. These ideologies are Madison Avenue packaged. They're very expensive. Hundreds of millions of dollars are spent on mass media to basically create these ideologies. You've got the militia survivalist ideology, which ostensibly battles against the radical environmentalist ideology, but in point of fact, they collaborate on many things. You've got a whole nominally Islamic terrorist apparatus stalking the planet, all of which, when you scratch the surface, goes back to this war in Afghanistan, which Kaczynski may have even been involved in some way. So you've got many different brand names and
labels.
You've
got Latin American indigenous peoples. You've got Buddhist terrorism. You've got Orthodox terrorism. You've got Protestant. You've got Roman Catholic. You've got Zoroastrian and all kinds.
But ultimately, what we have consistently found, and not just us, the Egyptian government, the French government, the Algerian government, the Israeli government, the PLO, have all filed official démarches, diplomatic démarches, with the British government over the fact that all roads lead to London when you're talking about global terrorism. And I would actually add that there are some very interesting developments in the Oklahoma City case. The attorney defending Timothy McVeigh has apparently stumbled onto some very interesting leads that suggest that there are some very strong British ties to the Oklahoma City bombing. We've said all along that McVeigh and Nichols could not have conceivably done that on their own, that at best they were low-level pawns in a much bigger effort. And independent of what we've said, McVeigh's attorney is now saying there are important leads that suggest that even some of the explosives may have been provided from certain of these political networks in London, which also play in the realm of the Punch and Judy show.
Well, I guess that's at least a look into this vast panorama of terrorism and sweeping away at least some of the myths that have been thrown around this so-called Unabomber case and the person of Kaczynski. I'm afraid that's all we have time for this week. I'd like to thank Jeff Steinberg of EIR, Roger Maduro. And this has been the LaRouche Connection. My name is Webster Tarpley, and we look forward to seeing you next time around.